Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Seattle Nice, the only podcast that tells you what's really happening in Seattle politics. I'm David Hyde. On today's show, controversial layoffs by King County's executive-elect, and incoming Mayor Katie Wilson is mulling over the Seattle Police Chief's future. She's also named her 60-person transition team and made some important new hires. These are all decisions that we're going to be talking over today. If we only had people who could tell us something about what they mean and why they're significant, like Erica C. Barnett of Publicola. Hi, Erica.
Hey, David.
And political consultant Sandeep Kaushik.
Hey, David.
So I want to start, I know it was sort of last week's news, but with this 60-person transition team, as well as some of these important new hires that she's made, including Deputy Mayor, Erica, what can you tell us?
Yeah, well, 60-person transition team, that's half the size, if you're counting, or less than half the size of outgoing Mayor Bruce Harrell's transition team 4 years ago. I think that's a trend in the
Does
right
transition
direction.
Transition team size matter?
I think that...
He really had a 120-person transition
129, I believe.
Really?
And, yeah.
That's
yeah.
That is bloated. And I thought Gurmai's 100 people was bloated. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
So I think that this whole transition team thing has really, in my time covering mayors of Seattle, it's really exploded. I think it's kind of silly. I think you need, you know, people who will advise you on important hiring decisions. But when you're getting into even 60 people, it's, you know, you're just kind of doing a lot of symbolic gesturing. But yes, 60-person transition.
It's sort of statement of intent for the people reading the tea leaves, that were the people that are insiders.
Leaving aside the transition team, the Brian Surratt is the new deputy mayor. And I think, you know, from what I'm seeing in the reactions and responses to this choice, Brian Surratt, former head of the Office of Economic Development, he's a veteran of the city, but also has done a lot of work since leaving the city in 2017 to on global trade and, you know, business deals. He's a business guy. And you can read sort of about his background at Publicola.com, but he is, you know, considered someone who will bring in business folks and has a lot of sort of city experience. The things that I think Katie Wilson has been criticized for perhaps not having, Harrell criticized her for not having relevant experience. And what she said was, I'm going to bring in people that have that kind of experience that, you know, that I don't necessarily have because I haven't been a government bureaucrat nor elected official before. So that is a signal. She's only going to have one deputy mayor, which I also think is a really good move. Bruce Harrell had four deputy mayors. They were apparently constantly engaged in backstabbing and, you know, clawing for power. And there'll just be one deputy mayor in the structure. And I think that that is a return to perhaps a more sane way of doing the mayor's office. You don't need, you know, five little mayors or four little mayors all bickering over control and power.
Sandeep, what do you think about this choice, Brian Surratt as deputy mayor?
Yeah, well, first of all, a really quick point on the transition team. When I did Ed Murray's transition after we won in 2013, we really tried to limit the transition team to 30 people, if I remember correctly. And I don't think we made it. I think we were at like 32, right? Because there is a lot of box checking that goes on, and there are various campaign supporters that you want to kind of reward in some sense. But you also try to want to make the transition team something more than window dressing and something more than sort of symbolism, and actually try to get something out of them. And it becomes unwieldy if it starts getting too big. So when you see 129 people or 100 people, that's sort of a sign to me that, well, we're not going to get much out of the transition team itself. As for the Surratt appointment, obviously Brian's somebody I've known for years, a friend of mine. And I thought a great hire on her part, right? I mean, he is somebody with deep city experience. He has great progressive street cred. He was the staffer that we tapped, a kind of younger staffer at OED at the time, to take on a very prominent role shepherding the $15 minimum wage negotiations. Back when they happened after Ed first became mayor, he did a stellar job of that. Landed, you know, the deal that became the Seattle's first in the nation, first big city in the nation to do a $15 minimum wage. He was also the point person for the city on landing the deal that led to Climate Pledge Arena, you know, entirely privately financed state-of-the-art arena. That's a real amenity for the city. And he was the lead for the city in negotiating all of that. So, you know, yeah, deeply experienced, but also I think a really interesting move on Katie's part in that she is, to Erica's point, extending something of an olive branch to some of the constituencies that didn't support her. Brian has widespread, he's a well-known and respected figure within the business community, right? And so is able to bring some of those relationships to the table.
So I think she announced like six new hires. What among those names does anyone else really stand out that you want to talk about today?
One name that I put at the top, even though it is perhaps a less flashy and exciting appointment, but Ali Panucci, who was on the city council central staff for many years and left, I would say was sort of driven away by the leadership at the city council under Sarah Nelson. And that was considered a really big loss. She was one of their main budget staffers, and she fled to, fled to Whatcom County to take a job up there. And she's going to be back as head of the city budget office. That was Dan Eater, who was also previously a city council staffer. And I think that is being, that news is being welcomed with some joy at City Hall. Because she is just such a pro and somebody that, you know, I think can take over that office very quickly on day one. And it's obviously a very important office, particularly as we've discussed, the city is going into massive budget deficits that were set up by Mayor Bruce Harrell and his budget and by the city council with their lack of fiscal restraint this year and last year. So she's going to have a really tough job crafting, you know, working on the budget for Mayor Wilson next year. But I think it's just a really stabilizing hire and a really important one.
Yeah, let me just reiterate, like, this is one where I 100% agree with Erica. Like, Ali Panucci is somebody I've dealt with on central staff. I always, as you both know, I've had plenty of complaints about the turn among some folks at central staff towards producing what I would call kind of biased information and data, kind of progressive activist inflected sort of what are supposed to be neutral, you know, factual kind of informational reports to support the legislative body turned into kind of progressive activism, right? And some of this stuff. But I never saw that from Ali Panucci. I dealt with her on a number of different issues. I always thought she was a straight shooter. So that, I thought that's a great hire. I really think, again, it's an impressive sign that the incoming mayor is trying to get back to good governance at the city, which is great.
Anyone else stand out for you, Sandeep, in that list?
Well, look, I will say this. So the org chart, as has been announced by the mayor-elect, really has three direct reports. So there's only one deputy mayor, Brian Surratt, who we talked about, but there's two other key people here. One, Jen Chan, who is going to be the director of operations. I'm forgetting what the exact title is, but basically the internal facing person running the bureaucracy. And then there's a chief of staff, right, coming from FutureWise, Kate Cruiser. So when I look at that, the three direct reports, the chief of staff that has a very close, longstanding personal relationship with the mayor-elect, right, worked at the Transit Riders Union before coming into FutureWise. And then you look at Jen, who has sort of sole authority over the 40-odd departments and offices of the bureaucracy of the city of Seattle. So I do wonder about how that power structure is going to work. Are they both kind of deputy mayors, just not in title, but in de facto? And you can have boxes in an org chart, but the reality of how power flows in the mayor's office sometimes doesn't reflect what is written on the boxes on the paper. So I'm going to be curious to see how the divisions of authority work. Like, what is Brian's role, right? They've said he's external facing as deputy mayor. What does that mean, right? And how much internal conversation and juice and authority is he going to have relative to the other two, and how that's all going to work out? I'm not 100% sure at this point.
Hey, Seattle Nice listeners, Seattle politics got you low? Well, get high with Uncle Ike's. Pissed at the mayor? Relax with a dollar joint. Pop a tire in a pothole? Eat a $2 gummy and chill. Whether you need something to pump you up for Saturday's protest or a mellow strain for your next sit-in, Ike's is your best friend. Now is the time to roll up, Seattle. Download the Ike's app today or head on over to Ike's.com. That's Ike's.com.
The other big news that's not really quite news yet, Erica, has to do with Seattle's current chief of police and his future. What have you learned? What can you tell us? What's the juice? What's the gossip? What's the inside story? What's the scoop?
Well, there's a lot of gossip, which I'm not going to get into too much.
Oh, come on.
Because there's just been like, I mean, especially with this administration, because I think they have so many people who are not in with the sort of the you know, the establishment at the city. There's been so much speculation and some of it has been so nuts. I mean, you know, everything from Deputy Mayor Lorena Gonzalez, oh my God, like let's run around with our hair on fire, to speculation about the future of the police chief. And I think a lot of it has been quite silly and quite obviously untrue. But the police chief, you know, he was appointed by Mayor Bruce Harrell without a lot of real public process and, you know, just kind of appeared one day and this is Harrell's guy. So I think there is a real question about, and I know there is a real question within Team Wilson about whether to keep him. He has been the subject of, you know, a number of pretty significant controversies, which I have covered on Publicola since he started, including the fact that he appointed an East Precinct police captain who had been, I mean, we've discussed this on the podcast before, who was infamous in the East Precinct for driving onto a sidewalk full of protesters and calling them cockroaches during the 2020 protests. And Isaiah Barnes responded to that, you know, pretty poorly by lashing out, trying to find out who had leaked the story to Publicola when, of course, they put it on their own social media. And then, you know, just kind of not a great reaction to a major misstep. The stuff with Denny Blaine, you know, cracking down on nude sunbathers at the city's historic LGBTQ beach. You know, just a lot of things like that, right? And so he is controversial. And at the same time, I think that politically, it's tough to oust a police chief without a really big reason to do so. I mean, look at how long it took Bruce Harrell, who waited way too long, in my opinion, to get rid of Adrian Diaz with all his scandals. So, you know, the council rubber stamped Barnes's appointment, voting unanimously to appoint him. So there's a lot of momentum behind him. And there's also just a lot of momentum behind not you know, upsetting the apple cart with the police chief first thing. So I think those are the things that Katie Wilson is considering as she decides whether to begin the search for a new police chief. But, you know, he is not well liked within the department from everything I hear, and has made, you know, a number of other controversial moves that I've covered that have kind of put him in the crosshairs, so to speak.
Ooh, you have the knives out for Sean Barnes, Eric.
I just think it's controversial. Yeah,
I actually like just to be more serious and jump in. I'm hearing a lot of what you're hearing too, right? That there's a real debate roiling internally about what to do and what move to make about whether to retain Chief Barnes or not. I totally agree with you that the East Precinct appointment?
Yeah, East Precinct.
Yeah.
Mike Tejan.
Yeah, was a major fuck-up, right? And the current and former mayoral people I talked to about that were like, how the fuck did that happen? Like, that should have never... It's as near as I can piece it together, this was an appointment that Sean Barnes made without even running it up the flagpole, maybe, with the mayor's office, or I couldn't quite pin that down. And this is the kind of decision that ended up blowing up and becoming very controversial. And Bruce Harrell reversed it after it became a controversy that ordinarily would be vetted by the mayor's office before it comes out. And so that's what I had been trying to figure out. Did they like actually sign off on this before the mayor?
I don't know.
Ended
the
up
mayor's
reversing
office
it?
Always signs off on captains, but I mean, I think that this speaks to just very quickly, sorry to interrupt, but it speaks to what I keep hearing about the insularity of that office and the fact that, you know, he brought in a bunch of people from outside and, you know, reportedly, according to, you know, multiple sources, really only listens to them. He got rid of the two top civilian people at SPD a couple weeks ago, fired Brian Maxey and Rebecca Boatwright. So, you know, I mean, I think that his inner circle is very small and not necessarily, you know, with a lot of institutional memory or knowledge of like what has happened before Sean Barnes arrived on the scene a year ago.
Right. And yeah, and just to reinforce the point you're just making there, I do think that's, as I understand it, the question for the incoming administration and the mayor-elect is, are we going to have a, you know, an appropriate input and line of communication with this police chief, given, you know, some of the things that have happened in the last few months under with him and under Bruce Harrell? And I think that's a question that they are trying to kind of figure out. I will say the case against, the case for keeping Barnes is this, right? You got a new mayor, an outsider with no city hall experience coming in from the cold. She's a self-avowed socialist. She has a track record in the past that she has, you know, not currently advocating, but instead in the past around shit like defunding the police and stuff like that. And so if the first thing you do coming in as this new mayor is axe the police chief and initiate a search, I think there are real questions about who the fuck is going to apply for it. Now, it's one thing if you want to do a kind of pro forma search and you have somebody in mind that you want to appoint. And I do hear speculation that former, I guess she was a captain, Deanna Nolet, is very close to the mayor-elect. And that,
yeah, and I've heard the same thing that you have.
And so, look, if you want to do what Bruce Harrell did when he came into office and do kind of a, not quite a fake search, but a search with a preordained outcome where Adrian Diaz, we all knew, was going to get appointed chief after this, you know, kind of go through the motion search and she's going to wants to do DNA, then okay, you can do that. But if you want to have a real search and get a national search and get the best candidates and stuff like that, maybe coming out of the gate and chopping off the head of the current chief when you're so brand new and with this, you know, reputation, right or not, might be challenging. And just to finish my point and then jump in, I do think that is something that they're cognizant of in the brain trust of the new mayor, and they're trying to kind of figure out how to balance that decision.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, this idea of doing a national search for the best candidates has been revealed to be something of a fiction. I don't know that like there is a secret police chief hiding out there in plain sight who's just like absolutely amazing. And if only we could get him or her, if we, you know, did the right kind of national search and gave the right amount of money. I mean, we got Sean Barnes in the last search, and he was a police chief of Madison, Wisconsin before that, in Chicago before that, in, you know, North Carolina. He has not headed up a big police department ever. And I think that's part of the problem that people are perceiving. You know, a lot of the stuff that he has come in, a lot of the sort of preconceived notions he's come in with, have been, you know, a little bit small town. And, you know, culturally, I think in a lot of ways, he's also not a great fit for Seattle.
I don't know what would be a great fit for Seattle in the sense that, I mean, it's kind of like running Seattle Public Schools or almost anything at this point. Being police chief of Seattle seems to me to be, I don't know why anybody would want that job, because the political pressures from all sides, from the police union, which is like completely unwilling to do what it should in terms of its contract and agreeing to make some changes that would make just reasonable police reform possible on the one hand, and the political pressures on the other. It's just got to be a really tough job. I don't know why anybody would want it, you know, let alone if our new mayor, Katie Wilson, comes in and the first thing she does is gets rid of the existing guy. So it's got to be tough. What I'm saying is it's got to be tough to find a great person to work here.
The thing that I think culturally is an odd fit is that, you know, I think Sean Barnes comes from a world where, I mean, there's a couple of things. Like, one, you know, he talks about Jesus a lot and talks about how God sent him to Madison and then God sent him here. And, you know, frankly, like, I don't think God sends anybody anywhere. And so, you know, to me, I hear stuff like that. Like, I get it. People are, you know, they have their religions. I don't think they belong in the government. Not the people, but I don't think religion belongs in the government. So that's just one culture. I mean, we're like one of the most secular cities in the entire country, if not the most. So that, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't love it. And, you know, second, I just think that coming from much smaller cities, some of the stuff that he's really gotten mad about, and, you know, these, just in my experience, you know, the search for the leaks and the never talk to the press if they don't, you know, if they don't love you. That is kind of small town thinking. And I have not experienced that to this extent with any police chief in the past. And it's kind of surprising. I mean, just the way that they have dealt with me as a member of the media has been, you know, unbelievably contemptuous. And, you know, fine, whatever. But it doesn't feel like big city thinking. And just the idea that they can make decisions with five people or whatever, instead of sort of going out and trying to find the mood of the city, just feels not a great fit for a big and growing city with a lot of constituencies that, you know, are fighting various battles. I think that they've handled the LGBTQ community, you know, pretty poorly with the Denny Blaine stuff, and then with appointing Mike Tejan, who was also involved in an incident where, you know, some pretty nasty things were said to a trans woman. And he did not intervene and got disciplined for that. So, you know, there's just a level of cultural sensitivity to the city that you're in that I think that any police chief needs to, you know, at least try to have. And I haven't really seen that so far. And I think that's a concern for Seattle.
I don't think he violated the establishment clause. God sent me here. But I would also say, like, I guess it's just a question is, should we say that a person who says that is really not a good cultural fit for Seattle because you and I don't go to church, or should should we be religiously tolerant? I know this is a question for you. Or should we be more religiously tolerant and say, you know, he can say that if he wants, it's okay for somebody to hold that office and express those views while in office. It seems a little intolerant to say he shouldn't say those things because it makes me uncomfortable.
My response is that I didn't say any of that. I gave an example of two examples of fumbling with the LGBTQ community, and said that I think that is an example of, you know, potentially a poor cultural fit in the city. And then I also said that it makes me, yes, a little uncomfortable. You know, another example is that I've been to public events where prayer has happened. And I don't like that in the city of Seattle, you know, where we've all stopped to have a prayer. You know, I think that is also, it makes me uncomfortable. I don't think I should be sort of pausing my job as a reporter or my job as a citizen to pray.
The only thing I was responding to was nothing about the LGBTQ stuff, of course. You know, I agree with you there. I also think that prayer in government is inappropriate and unconstitutional. However, if the police, the chief of police says, God sent me here, you know, it's like I'm watching sports and somebody points to God on the field or whatever, you know, it's a bit much for me. Like, I don't really love it, but whatever, you know, it's a pluralistic society. I have to accept that people have different beliefs than me. And so the chief of police saying God sent me here, I just don't see the problem.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I do see a problem with that because I, like, if that is the belief, I mean, yeah, I do see a problem with that. Does God also tell you, you know, how much accountability to accept and, you know, whether, I mean, I do see a problem with that. We live in a pluralistic society. However, if the police chief, as police chief, is giving interviews, this is what I quoted him from, is a couple of interviews he gave in Madison to reporters as part of his job, and saying that, you know, God is telling him to go and bless Seattle with his presence. You know, I just think, you know, there should be some separation of roles, and it makes me a little concerned when that is the belief structure that is going into decision making as a, you know, as a person who we're paying more than $300,000 a year to keep people safe and not violate people's rights.
Look, I think there is leaving the kind of Sean Barnes religiosity aside, right? Or putting a pin in that. I do think there's a broader question about, you know, does Sean Barnes, somebody who came here from Madison relatively recently, does he get Seattle and the way Seattle politics works more broadly? And I think that's still a bit of an open question, right? I've heard some people suggest that, you know, Barnes is a little flummoxed by, you know, our pretty distinctive brand of you know, progressivism in Seattle generally. And, you know, and he's not quite, doesn't have a feel for what works and what doesn't. And you know, I think that's an open question. That said, here's the affirmative case for Barnes. I've certainly talked to council members who will tell you that this chief has been really responsive when they have an issue in their district, you know, a problem at, you know, this park or that, that the chief has been willing to engage and to take action and to try to address problems before they grow or metastasize into something bigger. And that's why I think there is, Eric, I know you've been, you wrote about this, but there is a you know, behind the scenes lobbying effort going on to try to press the new administration to keep Sean Barnes around, coming not just from council members, but from other folks in the community as well. I also think Sean Barnes has significant support in the Black community in Seattle, which, as we talked about in a previous episode, is feeling a little, the old Black community in Seattle, I think, is feeling a little raw.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to define the Black community instead of presenting it as a monolith. Well, you're talking the old Bruce Black Harrell, establishment.
The old, whatever you want to call it, right? But that kind of institutional Black community rooted in the old CD and the churches and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, I think Sean Barnes has some juice in that world, right? And so that's another thing the mayor-elect is going to have to take into consideration. Are you going to, like, after you just defeated the Black Asian mayor, are you going to now throw over the Black police chief who has support in that key constituency? And there's going to be fallout from that if that happens, right? So that's...
Well, I
that's
think we're being responsive to neighborhoods. I mean, absolutely. Like, that is, to me, that's like kind of the number one. I mean, that's basic policing, and that should be a criteria for any police chief. Like, you know, will you be responsive when stuff happens? I mean, that is like 101 policing, and totally get that. I mean, I haven't, you know, heard the specifics of what you're talking about, but that should, I mean, you know, that should be, you know, Barnes talks about like stratified policing, which is basically just going places where shit happens and dealing with it and trying to stop things before they get worse. Now, I think that is a lot easier in a city. I mean, this also just speaks to, again, small town versus big town. It's a lot easier in Madison. I mean, I was looking at interviews with him where he was saying, oh, yeah, you know, maybe this year we need 10 more officers, which is just like such a different scale than what we're dealing with, you know, talking about in Seattle. So I don't know that it's quite as easy here to say, oh, we'll just go to 12th and Jackson and stop the problem before it starts or stop the problem before it gets worse. I think it's much more complicated, but being responsive to constituent concerns, you know, when they are reasonable and real is, you know, definitely an important aspect of being a police chief.
If I'm the chief of police anywhere, and I don't care who it is, I'd be kind of bummed that I'm hearing that the new mayor is thinking about firing me. Like, wouldn't it be better to just keep that really in the down low? Like, why are there so many leaks? Why do you guys know about this? Wouldn't it be better to just make that announcement when the time comes rather than like have all that stuff sort of trickle out? Because how do I do my job effectively when it's like this, that's sort of hanging over your head?
Well, we're certainly exacerbating the leak problem. I will say this. I actually think the incoming Wilson administration and their transition has done actually quite a good job of holding their cards close to the vest about appointments and stuff. Nonetheless, David, I think you're putting your finger on something real, that these rumors have been sort of building over time, you know, and speculation, I would say, maybe not the most informed rumor, but speculation that she's going to oust Sean Barnes. And that sort of provoked a reaction from his supporters. And they're talking to people. And then you're hearing, you know, as they're talking, you're hearing about sort of dissension within the transition apparatus. So I do think this is something where it's probably would be wise of Mayor-elect Wilson to make whatever decision she makes sooner rather than later, as opposed to allowing this kind of limbo situation around the police chief to fester very long, right? I do think you're putting your finger on a problem here for her, that there's so much chatter around City Hall about this right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, as an investigative reporter, like I think the concept of leaks is I don't know. It's just, it's always a little beside the point. I mean, people are talking. She has a 60-person transition team. And I think that stuff is going to get out no matter what. I didn't get information because of, you know, quote unquote leaks. It's just something that everyone is talking about. And it also just feels kind of obvious. I mean, Sean Barnes has been controversial. He's the police chief. She's a new mayor. He's only been there a year. Like, of course she's talking about it. And so I agree, though. I mean, making a decision faster rather than slower is probably a good move. I mean, you know, appointing an interim chief from within the department, one of the deputy chiefs, would probably be a good move, and doing that sooner rather than later, if she's gonna oust Barnes, is probably a good step. Because yeah, I mean, slow action does lead to speculation.
Yeah, on the gossip front, I had heard earlier this week, not confirmed, but I heard that the Katie was sitting down with Sean Barnes this week. You know, I think maybe even today, today or tomorrow, there's some meeting where presumably they're going to have a conversation about what direction or she's going to try to get a read on the mayor or what. I don't know exactly what the intent of the meeting is, but I did hear that there's a direct conversation happening this week.
The quality of some of the leaks last week, though, do we have to be a little bit cautious about that one? Or
I will say, I mean, as you know, again, like having, I wouldn't characterize the information that I'm getting as leaks. I think it's like a lot of people are very strongly advocating against keeping Barnes, and they are not being secretive about that. I mean, people who happen to be on the transition team are, you know, all, you know, interested people with agendas in a lot of cases. And so they are lobbying. I mean, there are a number of people in the transition team and outside the transition team, but in the city, who are lobbying pretty hard to oust him. And so, you know, they're talking to journalists as well.
Yeah, it's going both ways. So, there's two lobbying campaigns going, one to keep him and one to oust him. That's clear.
Yeah, I had heard she's planning to meet with President Trump. I think I read that.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. They're so good at generating headlines with silly questions.
Which you know, had Mayor Bruce Harrell said he might meet with Trump, we'd probably be having a conversation about that. But let's move on. Controversial layoffs by King County's executive elect Erica C. Barnett. I guess my question is, and you know, I had heard about this myself because somebody texted me and say, "What is going on here?" And I was like, isn't this just normal? Don't, you know, county executives come in and make shakeups? And that person said to me, no, this is not entirely normal. That was their opinion. But Erica, you've been doing some actual reporting on this and not just gossiping with somebody over a text thread. So what did you learn?
Your friend is right. It's not entirely normal. The new executive has come in and, of course, you know, shaken up the executive team, which I think at the county is about 30, 35 people. That's like the people around the mayor. So the mayor's office has about 40 staff. The King County executive has, you know, some number of dozens of staff. All those people, you know, always turn over every single time there's a new administration. We just haven't done that in a long time because it has been 16 years since the county elected a new executive. So that part is normal. What is unusual is that at the county, a lot of jobs that you would consider to be sort of standard bureaucratic jobs, stuff like, you know, regional planning, the people that draft the comp plan for King County, which is similar to Seattle's comp plan that we've talked about, those folks are directly in the org chart under the executive. And so those are some of the folks that are losing jobs or have jobs up in the air right now. And so that's one example. There's, you know, in addition, there's economists, there's the county demographer, there's people who work in the equity office. The entire King County Equity Office is being dissolved and sort of reformed in some fashion. Same thing with the climate office, which was a big priority of the former executive, Dal Constantine's. And so a lot of people are losing their jobs. And the executive really, really objected through a spokesman to the term layoffs, but people are losing their jobs. They're being laid off as of November and this week, but they will keep their jobs officially through January 2nd. And so, you know, people are freaking out. They've been doing bureaucratic work, as a bunch of them told me, and are not political appointees. We're not like friends of Dow, but they are losing their jobs, and they felt like it was done in a really kind of impersonal way. A lot of them described it as just being essentially an email from a staffer telling them to sit around and wait by the phone all weekend. And if they got a call on Monday, they'd have a job. And if they didn't, they wouldn't. And I think people were really, just really felt very burned by that after, you know, in some cases, you know, decades-long careers at the county.
look, I'm going to take my side on this and say, look, they're political appointees. Maybe they weren't like directly the people in the exec's office per se, but they are political appointees. It's been 16 years. New executive coming in. He has his own vision. He wants his own team. It's not that crazy sounding to me that he would say, I'm going to kind of do a broader sort of house cleaning about and bring in my own people into the political appointments that that are in my purview, right, as the executive. Now, I get that some people are, you know, going to lose their jobs as a result of it, and they're going to be unhappy about that. But, you know, administrations do change, and political appointees don't have civil service protections, and they don't have any right to assume that they're going to be retained forever at the county when there's a new administration coming to power.
I mean, you're calling them political appointees. I mean, you are talking about, like, the equivalent in the city would be as if Katie Wilson came in and had the authority to just fire mid-level comp plan people in the Office of Planning and Community Development. I mean, it's more of a structural issue that those people who have been working on King County's comp plan, which is due, not sure the timeline, but soon, those folks are losing their jobs, and they are, you know, and they do not consider themselves political appointees. They're planners. And I mean, that's just an example. So the county demographer, I mean, just people who are doing these mid-level sort of jobs that, you know, don't know Dow, don't know Gamai. I mean, you can call them political appointees, but I think if you just sort of pluck, you know, if you make political appointments to those positions, I'm not sure they will have the institutional knowledge to continue, you know, the job of like planning a comp plan and doing zoning work in the same way. I mean, it's just a different kind of job than what you're describing.
Maybe a little bit of a bigger, more consequential, not controversy, but kerfuffle that's happened in the last couple of weeks around the incoming county exec is that he's gotten blowback from, you know, elements of the left on his appointment of Brad Smith, the president of Microsoft or the head of Microsoft, to be a co-chair of his transition. And, you know, it's the genocide, Gaza, Microsoft is bad stuff. And he responded to that by putting out a statement that was pretty negative, pretty much kind of almost endorsing the activist worldview and kind of saying, yeah, Microsoft is really bad and I don't really like them either for what they've done, but, you know, they're too big for me to ignore and therefore I had to put their guy on our committee. And that, I think, was a rookie mistake from the incoming exec. I think that sent a signal to a lot of folks that he's easily manipulated by the fringe activists, throwing his own, you know, transition co-chair under the bus when there's like, you know, a couple of tweets, you know, and I think I've heard that that's caused a lot of internal consternation with Girmay and his transition team to kind of take a lesson learned from that. That I don't think I think Girmay does need a relationship with the biggest, you know, one of the biggest employers in the region. And if he's going to come out of the gate asking someone to be on his campaign co-chair and then is going to immediately like kind of, you know, start frothing at the mouth just because somebody criticizes it, that's not a good move on his part coming out of the gate.
That does. I mean, I agree. I mean, what is, you know, is the county going to, I mean, first of all, boycotts don't work. I'm sorry. We live in a world that has like two companies now. And so unfortunately that strategy, like we're not going to move everything at the county to, you know, to be on Linux. So, and not use Amazon Web Services and then go to Elon Musk's company. I mean, you know, it's just, it's a rabbit hole that doesn't go very deep. But also, I mean, I think it's funny, Sandeep, you're like saying, oh, this is all normal with the shakeups and everything. I would think that if this was Katie Wilson, we would be talking about how inexperienced she is, you know, coming in and just firing all these people with so much knowledge of how the county works. And you know, doesn't she need all that institutional knowledge? So I'm just surprised by what, you know, why you think that that experience question doesn't or experience issue doesn't apply to Zala.
Can I just say how much I love that question? And it also applies to the double standards we've been talking about, Sandeep. You know, like it goes in all directions. So I love that question.
First of all, Giron's not an outsider to the county, right? He's a county council member and has been for a while. So I would say he's a county insider. So the experience question isn't as pointed, I think, with Giron coming in. And if he's like, hey, man, I have an insider's view of how, you know, these various, you know, how the political structure of the exec, what's in the exec's purview needs a shakeup, you know, he's probably had a pretty good perch from which to kind of make that determination, right? Because he's been on the inside. So that's one thing. But the other thing I would say is, you know, we talked about Sean Barnes a little bit, but I think we're still waiting to hear about, there's a whole bunch of department directors, right, at the city who are awaiting their fates too, from, you know, big department, SDOT, you know, HSD, the Human Services Department. What's going to happen there? What's going to happen to the Office of Housing, right? I'm hearing... So we that's the next shoe to drop here. We're still waiting to see what moves Katie makes about, she said that some heads are going to roll at departments, right? But she hasn't said, and some will be retained, and she hasn't said who yet. And so that's the next thing I'm kind of waiting to see. And anyway.
I don't think that'll be that quick. I mean, I think it will, you know, obviously it'll happen. That always happens with new mayors. They appoint some new department heads. I mean, and usually it's, you know, it's the high profile stuff generally that gets the most attention. Obviously, SDOT is a big one. SDOT has had, they've had trouble retaining long-term SDOT chiefs. Right now, it's Adiam Emery, who was a deputy mayor under Harrell. So that's one. Yeah, the Office of Housing, I think, is another one. But I think a lot of those decisions are going to take a little bit longer. And we often see, you know, announcements about that stuff in January. So, you know, again, like speculation, the longer speculation grows, the more wild it tends to get. So if she's going to make calls on some of those and already knows it, like the sooner the better, I think. But, you know, I think that'll happen over a little more time. I mean, I have my predictions, but I don't want to make
I have some predictions.
Because I don't want speculation.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
Oh, man, stay tuned. I can't believe we're not just full-on gossiping
I will just say this from recent history in the city of Seattle. No SDOT director has ever survived a mayoral transition, going back like 20 years at least, right? So that's one that position obviously is drawing a lot of speculation, right? And just because of the historical reality that new mayors tend to want their own person.
Well, and the fact that you know, Adiam Emery, she was at the mayor's election night party. She's a big ally. And so, yeah, I mean, I would expect, you know, if I was her, I'd be updating my resume.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, or maybe you didn't. You probably didn't. But that's it for another edition of Seattle Nice. She's Erica C. Barnett. He's Sandeep Kaushik. I'm David Hyde. Our editor is Quinn Waller. And thanks, everybody, so much for listening.